Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today, I'll be speaking to Carl Dix. Carl Dix is a founding member and a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party USA. He is a regular contributor to Revolution newspaper and founder of Stop Mass Incarceration.
Carl Dix, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you for having me on again, Cindy.
Well, it was great. It was great to see you in Washington, D.C. Last week and be on the same panels. And I think the video of your talk on our panel is up at springrising.org. So we'll be sending that out with the newsletter when we promote this show.
Okay.
So while we were in Washington, D.C. on the panel that you were on for Spring Rising and the panel that I moderated, you gave an interesting story about your experience during Vietnam that was something that I didn't know. And during the panel, I said, just makes me love you more to know this. So tell my listeners about your experience during the tragic Imperial War in Vietnam.
Yeah, I mean, I was drafted into the military back in 1968, given orders to go to Vietnam. And, you know, when I got the orders, I really didn't want to go to Vietnam, but that was mainly because of inconvenience.
Uh-huh.
You know, I might get killed. I'd be killing other people. Not something I wanted to be in the middle of, but also, if you refuse to go, they send you to prison.
Uh-huh.
So I had to find out whether this was really something I couldn't do and had to not do. And I have to thank the anti-war movement of the time, because people were doing a lot of exposure of exactly what the war in Vietnam was. And then I talked to a lot of GIs about it. And when they told me what they were doing over there, and some of them liked what they were doing, others hated it, but it came through that they were both saying the same kinds of things, that they were in a war and the whole country seemed to be their enemy, men, women, even children. And I was like, why are all those people fighting against what the government's trying to send me to do? And that led me to look into it enough to learn that this war was not something I could be a part of, that I could not be part of trying to suppress people who were trying to free their own country, especially not as a black person who was looking around at black people not being free here in the United States.
Right.
So I decided I had to refuse to go to Vietnam, but I also connected with other GIs who didn't want to go. And we ended up, six of us ended up refusing to go to Vietnam. I was part of the Fort Lewis Six GIs who refused to go to Vietnam, which was the largest mass refusal of GIs to, you know, for orders to go to Vietnam.
And you did end up in prison.
Oh, yeah. We ended up in prison. I did 2 years in Leavenworth Military Penitentiary. One of those years I ended up spending in solitary confinement. And, wow, you know, from one end, prison is not a good experience. And solitary confinement in prison is certainly not a good experience. But it was something that I'm very glad I did. Because had I gone to Vietnam and been involved in that, I don't think I would be the kind of person I am today. Right. Because it really was a moral question. You know, was I going to be a part of the kind of atrocities? And you know, later as I dug into it more, I realized that, well, this is an empire that does this all around the world. And the atrocities that they were committing in Vietnam is a regular part of their war fighting. And they've continued that up to today with more high tech involved in it. But if I had become part of that war effort, I wouldn't be the person that I am today. And I'm very glad that I did not descend into that, because you lose your humanity when you begin to treat others in inhumane ways. And even if it's done at the orders of your government, that doesn't absolve you from that question of surrendering your humanity.
Well, especially if it's done at the orders of this government. So corrupt, so violent. But, so, you know, I had to wrestle with the same question when I decided I was going to become a war tax resister, that it could very well lead, you know, lead to prison for me. But, you know, like you, I decided I'd rather go to prison than participate in funding the murder of innocent human beings. And, of course, the other oppression, torture and all kinds of oppression. Now we're facing severe, this is nothing new to the Black community, but the U.S. now is facing severe police state repression. And you have an organization called Stop Mass Incarceration, and it's calling for a walkout and general strike on April 14th. So can you talk about that?
Yes. Stop Mass Incarceration Network called a meeting in Atlanta back in February. And out of that meeting, we issued a call for April 14th as a day of disrupting business as usual all across the country, because that business as usual includes rampant cases of police murdering people, especially Black and Latino people, and not being punished in any way. In fact, the whole legal system backs them up in committing these murderous deeds. So we feel like people need to step out and step up and say, this must stop. You know, we look back at the protests that erupted last year, and we basically said, look, those protests were not only powerful, they were beautiful, and they were very necessary, because without those protests, the reality of the way that police are deployed in the inner cities across the country, like occupying armies, would not have been pushed out into the open. Now the authorities are trying to suppress those protests with mass arrests, false promises, and trying to cover that reality back up. So it's very important that we not let that go down, that in fact we come out with even more power. And that's what we're calling on and mobilizing people to do Tuesday, April the 14th. No school, no work, into the streets, disrupting business as usual. We're going to high schools, to colleges. Students are taking this up. We're going to religious institutions, into the neighborhoods, and trying to bring everybody out to stand together and say in one loud voice, police getting away with murder must stop.
And what's the website for that?
The website that people should go to is stopmassincarceration.net. You can find materials that you can use to get involved in the mobilization. Plans are beginning to go up for what's going to happen on April 14th, as well as events that are going to happen between now and April 14th. And Cornell West and I have just gotten together to issue a call for an emergency gathering in New York City on Monday, April the 6th, that we're going to live stream all across the country. It's going to be 7 o'clock East Coast time, which makes it 4 o'clock West Coast time. And people in the middle of the country, you all have to sort out.
Yeah, your adjust time your time.
But we are going to speak to this reality of police getting away with murder and what needs to be done about it, and the protests on April 14th. And we're working now to bring others to join us in doing that. They're going to be family members of people whose loved ones have been killed by the police. They're going to be youth activists, other voices of conscience, religious leaders, all speaking to how this is unacceptable and it must stop. And we're going to inspire and galvanize people to act on April 14th and beyond to stop this horror.
So I do want to talk about something else besides A14. But first, in this capitalist society, really stopping business as usual is one of the only, I think, ways that we can be effective, because that's what they care about, hitting them in the pocketbook, right?
Well, this is going to hit them more than in the pocketbook. This is going to hit them as far as their image as a homeland of democracy and freedom. It's going to be the case that the eyes of the world, which were on this country and the way in which it brutalizes and even murders Black and Latino people last year, we're going to refocus that. Mm-hmm. We're going to strip that bare and let people know that here in this country, there are people who oppose this and are politically standing up and fighting it. And we want that to be seen around the world, the way that people in Palestine saw people in Ferguson resisting police murder and being hit with tear gas, and were sending them tweets on how to deal with tear gas.
Right.
We want the world to see this, and we want the whole country to see this, because one thing that happened last year, and that's very, very important, is that people who were suffering this and thought there was nothing they could do about it, when they saw people flowing into the streets, they were inspired to stand up and resist themselves because they realized they wouldn't be alone. And then that pulled the covers off of this for the people who are sheltered from it and can go through their lives without directly experiencing it. As more and more of them begin to see that reality, they had to confront whether they could stand aside and let it go down. And one of the most heartening things to me about those protests was the diversity of them.
Right.
You know,
right.
There'd be times when there would be thousands of young people marching through the streets here in New York City, where I was when this went down. And there were as many young white people as young Black and Latino people. And that's very important, because the system relies on people not knowing the circumstances that others are on, especially those on the bottom of society, and then buying into their story that those people are thugs, gangsters, and criminals who deserve what's done to them. And a lot of people not accepting that is very, very important. I just came off of a 2-week tour that took me from Selma through St. Louis, and I ended up going to Wisconsin, where police had just killed an unarmed recent high school graduate, a young Black man, in his own home. And hundreds of high school students had flowed into the streets of Madison, Wisconsin,
right.
Marched through the streets, marched over to the state capitol and took it over. And Madison, Wisconsin has a small Black population. These high school students were mostly white. And you had these young white people marching through together with Black people and some Latinos, but it's an overwhelmingly white city, marching through the streets saying, "Justice for Tony Robinson," that was the young man's name, "and if we don't get it, shut it down." you know, like, and they were blocking the highways, taking over the state capitol.
Awesome.
This is very important, you know. This is something that we haven't seen in decades. People breaking through the walls that society puts up between different kinds of people. This is very, very important. And we also have to break down those walls between people in this country and people around the world and not go with this thing that whatever this government does, as long as they say it's being done for the safety of Americans, then we should get behind it. Because we have to see that this government carries out atrocities all around the world and in this country. And it's not a question of if the atrocity doesn't hit you, it's okay. If it's an atrocity, if it's a horror, it's a horror, whoever it hits. And we all have to stand together on it. That's why it was important that that panel we did in Washington, D.C. took up targeted killings around the world and in the United States.
Well, yes, and Spring Rising last week, we really worked hard to bring in the Black Lives Matter coalition there from Washington, D.C. to make these links. And we're super looking forward to Spring Rising Fall Edition to have those members of the community take a more active role in planning the next anti-war intervention in Washington, D.C. And so, Carl, the organization StopMassIncarceration.net, it's really important when when the U.S. says we're fighting all these wars to spread our wonderful freedom and democracy across the planet, but we know that it's just crap. Talk about this mass incarceration in the United States. We incarcerate far more percentage of our population than any other country does.
Yeah, that's very true, and it's something that people need to confront. The United States, 25% of the world's prisoners are in jails in the United States. The U.S. percentage of incarcerated people is greater than the percentage of people who were imprisoned in South Africa under apartheid. There's no society that has ever existed in the world that imprisons as much of its population percentage-wise as the U.S. does. And that tells you something about the nature of this society. What tells you even more about it is that those prisoners are mostly Black and Latino and mostly in prison for nonviolent drug crimes. And what this tells you a lot about this society, because that was a turn that came during the Nixon administration back in the 1970s, and it was a targeted attempt to suppress Black people and then later Latino people because they were afraid of the responses of those sections of society to the inequality that people were up against in this white supremacist society. So this is a targeted form of suppression to keep people down and under control, and it leads to treating people as less than human. And I'm not just talking about while they're in prison, although that is the case. There's a huge percentage of the prisoners, 80,000 people in this country, are held in solitary confinement in prison under conditions that are internationally recognized as torture. You know,
right.
That's right. Something that people need to know. The U.S. is also the largest torturer in the whole world. People need to know this about this country so that they can get a sense of what we're dealing with. And we in the Stop Mass Incarceration Network decided we had to work to expose this, but also to build resistance to it. We began 3.5 years ago with a campaign to stop and frisk in New York City as part of highlighting the whole gamut of mass incarceration and all its consequences, which include the unleashing of the police, like an occupying army that I talked about, and the brutality and even murder that is sanctioned by this government in the inner cities, largely targeting blacks and Latinos. It amounts to a slow genocide. And when I say that, I'm using the international definition of genocide, putting a group of people in whole or in part in conditions where they cannot survive and thrive as a people. And that is what's going on. When you look at how many people are in prison, how once people get out of prison, they still are treated as second-class citizens and less than human, can't live in public housing, can't get government assistance to go to school, get an education, or job training. Many states, they're not even allowed to vote, even though voting doesn't really change things for you. It says something when they don't let you vote. You know, this is something that's got to be stopped. And Cornel West and I came together to form the Stop Mass Incarceration Network to build up resistance to stop it. And, you know, as a revolutionary, I came at this in particular because I see this as a concentration of the oppression of black people that's been built into the fabric of this U.S. society from the very beginning, and something that is going to take revolution, nothing less, to end once and for all, the same way that that's going to be necessary to end all the horrors this system brings down. And, you know, this is a very important time both to be building resistance to these horrors, whether it's the continuing wars for empire, the attacks on women, or mass incarceration and all of its consequences targeting black and brown people, both because the horrors are intensifying, but also there's a certain vulnerability of the system because of the resistance that people have been waging, especially the outpourings around police murder. So this is a time for people to be digging into where do these problems come from, what needs to be done to deal with them, and what's demanded of a moral human being in this period. And this is really a good time, and there's a good way for people to get into this at this time, because it'll happen before this interview, but there's going to be the premiere of a film of a dialogue that Cornel West and Bob Avakian engaged in back in November. That film's going to premiere Saturday, March 28th, which will be the day before this interview airs.
Right.
And people can dig into this by checking out that film. The reason I'm talking about it now is that although the film will have premiered before people hear this, once it's premiered, it's going to be released online. And people can go online and watch this dialogue. The theme of it is revolution and religion, the emancipation of humanity, and the role of religion. And in it, you'll see two deep thinkers exploring the world and why it's like it is, and what needs to and can be done to transform it, and where religion fits into that or doesn't fit into it. And they'll do a lot of discussion about current events, including rampant police killings, how to look at that, and what needs to be done. And you get a sense of people with quite different perspectives, because they do have different perspectives. One's a revolutionary communist. The other, Cornel West, is motivated by his Christian principles, but who can discuss their differences with mutual respect and also find a lot of common ground in opposing the injustices being visited on people today. So I would really encourage people to go to the website revcom.net to look at that film, which will be up on the website by the time this interview airs.
And yes, we'll also link it in our newsletter. But I think most of my listeners know who Cornel West is, but for the listeners who don't know who Bob Avakian is, tell us a little bit about him.
Oh, yeah. Bob Avakian is the leader of the Revolutionary Communist Party, which I am a representative of, in addition to being a founder, a co-founder of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. And he's a man who has spent the last 40 years addressing everything that stands between humanity and its ultimate emancipation. He has looked at previous revolutionary societies, identifying both things that they did right and what they accomplished, but also things they did wrong and where they went off track or fell short, in order to figure out why those shortcomings and errors happened, where they came from, and how to break through on them, so that when revolution is made wherever in the world, the next time that power's in the hands of the people, they'll be able to go farther and do better with that power. And that approach has brought forward a new synthesis or a new approach to making revolution and bringing into being societies that people would want to live in and that are actually moving towards eliminating oppression and exploitation. And people need to check out this new synthesis of revolution and communism that Avakians develop, which is also accessible at the website revcom.us. And I would especially recommend a constitution for a future socialist republic in North America, which takes that vision that Avakians develop and concretely applies it to a society like this and tries to lay out how a revolutionary society could function in the aftermath of a revolution in a society like this.
Do you find that the word revolution is so little understood, and that, do you find that it turns people off when you say revolution, and when they can say things like Chevy revolution or IHOP has their pancake revolution or their so-called revolutions around the world that are really just funded by USAID and other things to overthrow governments that aren't friendly to the United States? What do you find when you talk to the average person here in the United States when you say that word revolution?
Well, when I say revolution, I find that people mostly don't know what it means.
Right.
Whether they view it positively or negatively, they don't know exactly what it is that they're being stirred up against or being attracted to. And we try to bring to them what it does mean. When we bring out that we're talking about communist revolution, then you get a scene where mostly people have heard negative things about it.
Right.
But again, they often don't know exactly what it is they're dealing with, because they have heard about communism and revolution from the capitalists,
right,
who definitely don't want people to know what that is, because that could be the end of their system. But what I'm finding is that there are people who are increasingly open to hearing what it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking back to myself, who I grew up in the 1950s here in this country, and communism and revolution were bad words. But I also then had to consider that the same people who were telling me communism and revolution were bad were also telling me that black people were inferior. So I felt like, well, gee, I better dig into this one on my own. And we're encouraging and helping people to dig into it on their own too, you know. Because, and for a lot of people, the horrors being brought down are impelling them to this, but at the same time, as they see people standing up and resisting, that inspires them to resist too. And so there's a certain synergy between what's going to happen on April 14th with a day of shutting down business as usual to say police murder must stop, and people being impelled to look at, do things have to be this way? Is there a better way for society to be? I see we're running out of time.
Right.
Let me do the website again. Stopmassincarceration.net to find out about April 14th, to get enlisted and involved in it. It's about getting free, and freedom is not a spectator sport. It requires your involvement.
Right, and I'm looking forward to going to Berkeley tomorrow to see that dialogue between Bob Avakian and Cornel West, and write a review and of it, and then have the information up at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox website about everything that you just talked about. So Carl Dix, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again. And I hope that A14 is a wonderful success. And I know that I will be participating and encouraging all of my supporters and contacts to participate also.
Okay.
All right, Carl. Have a good weekend.
You too, Cindy.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, that's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week. I hope you were inspired to shut everything down on April 14th and go to stopmassincarceration.net to find more information. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller. I'd like to thank Carl Dix for his work and for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening to and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.